Please stand by. And welcome to our chat. I know it's a little late, but nonetheless, we're here. And as far as I'm concerned, it is the right time to be with you. I appreciate all of you. I appreciate Nathan and Tubworks. Also, Kevin and Ralph is with us here from Ohio. Sheila, good to see you. Christopher is here. Mike, Nathan, Jeff Kennedy, Jamie Rocks. So many others who have joined us here on our chat for tonight. I apologize for being a half an hour late. I was not in the area. I was racing to get back to the area, and unfortunately, I knew that I would not make it back in time, so I radioed ahead that we would be probably a half hour late. So those of you that have hung with us, thank you. Thank you very much for doing that. Tomorrow I'm supposed to be at PodFest in Los Angeles, the LA Podcast Festival. I don't know where I'm supposed to be. I don't know where, what room. I know the hotel, and I know where it's going to be taking place. I have no fucking idea where we're supposed to be, or what time, for that matter. So, Jeff, how you doing, man? So I think that we will make an attempt at communicating with the authorities and the powers that be, and you know, try and get our shit together with that one. We'll have another Milwaukee Lion game for you this weekend. We had Jack I. Gagner. I actually have the results of week one in the Dickman America Football League. I don't know if anybody gives a shit, but I did not post these, and Jack didn't read them off in his Lions-Lion broadcast, I should say, so it was incomplete. Week one action in the Dickman America League: Tucson 45, San Diego nothing, Portland 27, LA 13, Milwaukee 55, Houston 13, Utah over San Antonio 14-6, Tampa 45, New York 13, Miami past DC 31-24. All right, I just to offer you some, I don't know, discussion here as to what's happening here in the Henry world and Henry nation. As I said, we have to podcast to do tomorrow, or excuse me, the podcast festival to do tomorrow, and that I'm not absolutely clear on, but we'll do what we can. Secondly, many of you have probably asked, Jesus Christ, got a lot of people here weighing in. I'm going to be with you guys in just a second. Secondly, many of you have asked, Phil, what's up with Classic Friday? What are you trying to pull? This is deep, deep archive material. To explain, it's nothing more than what I've said it is, which is an attempt to market our website, to show people what we have in our archives. But the minute that I suspect that there is any devaluing of the material, it'll get pulled off the air or get pulled off of the Podcast One feed. Now, not that Podcast One hasn't done a great job for us, but what I'm simply saying is we're not going to be doing this every single week ad infinitum. It could very well end this week, as far as I'm concerned. On October the 3rd and the 4th, we will be taking the full weekend to enter into a writing session for the forthcoming television pilot that we have told you we're working on. in terms of the show itself, the podcast itself, if you will, the daily effort, if you will, we continue to produce that and evolve that and create that. I have also been involved in. I've also been involved in some voiceover work, and I think I told you guys I most recently did another episode of The 7D on Disney, and again, it was a ad-lib So I got to tell you, anytime they say to you, "Hey Phil, take a grip on this script and go ahead and ad lib off of the lines," in other words, go off book, as we say. It's fucking amazing, man, and I've done it twice for Disney. So I have to tell you, of all of the producers I've ever worked for doing any kind of voiceover, Disney is the one, surprisingly, that's given me more freedom than anybody else. So I'm fucking stoked on that shit, and I appreciate very much their confidence in me in doing that. I'm going to roll back here and see what's up with a lot of people talking about how they like Classic Fridays. I'm appreciative of that. Tub works from Aberdeen, Washington. Beautiful. Bernie, hello from Fortuna, California, man. Bernie Alvarez. Nice to make your acquaintance, Bernie. I don't think I've met you. Johnny, how you doing, brother? Johnny Bean, that's you? Haven't talked to you in a long time, man. By the way, guys, make sure that... And Jeff, thank you for your question about my brother. My brother's doing infinitely better. My understanding is that he has to do a round of dialysis, but... there's not going to be a ongoing dialysis that a lot of people who have to go through that deal with. It's a temporary thing. That's what the doctors tell us. I don't know. You know, in this world, man, we pretty much fucking make our fate. And my brother Dara, as much as I love him and honor him as my older brother, you know, he didn't take very good care of himself, you know. I mean, he really just beat the shit out of himself, and as a result of that, there you go, man. I was just reading a note from somebody who was talking to me today on Facebook. They said their mom died at 63 from just a combination of fucking lung disease and shit. And I said, I'm sorry to hear that. And I said, you know, it's funny, I'm 63, man, I feel fucking great, you know, and it's the farthest thing from my mind that I'm going to collapse from some sort of health-related disease. Although, you know, we all give out. But fact is, you don't have to, like, go into those years completely destroyed, man. I mean, that's just a fallacy. I quit smoking at 57 because I had fucking double pneumonia, you know. But today, as I sit here talking to you guys, I feel fucking great, and the only thing wrong with me is there's not enough hours in the goddamn day, as far as I'm concerned. So, Leslie, thank you very much for your question. Colby Jack, I like Classic Fridays. I just wish the bits were longer. Well, I mean, the whole thing comes out, Colby, to an hour, and, you know, you can always, because you're a backstage pass holder, you can always go and look that shit up in the archive if you want. Benny, thank you for that vote of confidence. I read on the LA Podfest site you're on at 2 p.m. Bonnie, thank you. Bonnie, whereabouts am I going to be? Because I don't even know where the fuck I'm supposed to be. 2 o'clock? Okay, great. That means I... Thanks, Bonnie, for that information, because I don't know where the hell I'm supposed to fucking be. James, Phil, you should be facing the road while you're driving. You know, the rear screen. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I've got eyes in the back of my head. Yeah. Thank you. Tubworks. I'm all about the Erica Dorton bits. Yeah. Jeff Kennedy. Disney, you didn't pretend that you got hit in the balls when you were ad-libbing for the Disney gig. I guess. Kidding, of course. Glad you're getting work that you enjoy. Yeah, that's true, Jeff. But then again, Disney didn't give a shit that I got hit in the balls at the park, so... You know, all's well that ends well. As a matter of fact, I actually asked the Disney people. The site is down. I'll keep checking. Thank you, Bunny. I actually asked the Disney people, does Disney have a problem with the sort of the reputations of some of the people that work for them? And they said, you know what? In this day and age, in this modern world that we live in, no. It is what it is. The world is what it is. And people are what they is. Robert, I wasn't sure I was going to listen to the classics since I've heard them all, but I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Robert. You've heard them all, huh? All 20,000 fucking hours? Jeff, whatever happened to the Swede? Yeah, I see the Swede all the time, and I have dinner with him in a couple of weeks. He's alive. You know, he's living with some chick. Or, no, he's not living with her, but he's seeing her. And last I heard, the Swede is going to go back out with his pal Rick, and they were last in Mongolia riding fucking horses, seriously. And the Swede came back from Mongolia, and I think they're going back out again, man. I think they're going to South America. I mean, this friend of his is all about going to crazy fucking places. And then the Swede's going to move to Arizona with his lady. So, is there an update on HendryCon? No, there is not, Kevin, other than the fact that we're still sort of putting together the logistics of the thing. What it's going to take, how much it's going to cost, and where it's going to be. Colby Jack, I love and use the archives. It's a blast to zero in on a character and listen to five or six episodes of them. That's a great idea. It's a lot of, you know, we should put on the page different ways to listen to the archives. Character, one character, five or six episodes of that character, a period of time, especially 2001, post 9/11, pre 9/11. If you were to ask me, is there a sort of a continental divide in terms of the material on the website, I'd say that 9/11 separates the pre-world of sort of innocent Phil. And you know, they say that a decade is not really defined by the date so much as it is by the event. I think that the Phil Hendry show isn't defined by the date so much as the event. I think the innocence of Phil Hendry from 1990 through, I'd say, 2001 is different from the post 2001 serious, sometimes funny Phil Hendry that defined the show after that event. So Bernie Alvarez says, my favorite classic is the one where you and David G. Hall were helping a caller who kept hearing you son of a bitch on the radio. You had her laying on the floor dialing her phone with her nose. Actually, that wasn't David G. Hall. It might have been Steve Nichol. It was in Miami. And it was a woman who heard a drop that Neil was using, and I started using it. And that pretty much confused that poor lady for the better part of an hour after Neil got off the air, and then I was on the air from 2 to 3. Pumping this fucking drop, you son of a bitch, you know. There it is again. Nathan, I'll dial up a show in the archives and listen to some of them while I'm at the office. That's good. That's better than anything you could possibly do otherwise. That's better than any other media you could listen to, I think. Gar, haha, yeah, I loved you, son of a bitch. Phone audio glitch almost got her to buy a new phone. Robert, listen to the shows as they occurred. Well, after about 9/11, so I guess there might be some 90 shows I haven't heard. There are 90 shows you haven't heard, Robert. And I'll tell you, there's 90s and 2000 shows you haven't heard. Somebody asked me or posted, what about that early KFI stuff, man? How come you don't have that? It's a good question, and as I mentioned during a pre-show once, that stuff was recorded by KFI Clear Channel in Los Angeles on old-school logger tape. And if you've ever seen logger tape, it's about that wide. It's on a roll, two rolls, and it just rolls for about 24 hours and then records over what it rolled through the night before. Maybe it's longer than 24 hours. And the only reason why KFI or any station in the world recorded their talent wasn't to preserve the greatness of the radio. It was to make sure they didn't get fucking fined, so they had something to play for the FCC, which gives you an idea as to just how fucking stupid those motherfuckers are. Now, of course, they want to hold on to all that material. They want to hold on to all that stuff. Clear Channel, my understanding is, it's basic in all of their contracts. We own all the material, you know. But they don't do anything with it other than hold on to it so the FCC doesn't fine them. So to answer your question, between the fall of 96 and the fall of 93, KFI had all that stuff, and it was recorded over. So I would say the following thing, and it's a great question, man. If you have any of that material, or if you know anybody that has any of that material, we would be very grateful if you turned us on to it. We would put it into the archive under your name, so we would name the archive after you, and be able to preserve it properly. Any material any material we do not have, or any material that gets aired anywhere other than our website or any place where we approve, is technically violating our copyright. So It's how we make our living. I'm not trying to be an asshole, but I would ask you to understand that, you know, however you make your living, I'm sure you would appreciate it if somebody was taking your work and making dollars on the side that you weren't making. So you'd appreciate if somebody told you about that. That's all a copyright really represents, making sure that you get, you know, money that you are owed for your own work. So if there's anybody out there with a collection of our material from 1996 through 1999, the KFI material, and I know that Matt Groening, I think, had said that he'd recorded it. I don't know if he still has that stuff or not. And you make it available to us, we'd be ever grateful, and we would publicly memorialize that material in your name on our website. So something to consider. My girlfriend is wanting to do her first Vegas trip, thinking that Henry Fest would be awesome for her. I agree, Jamie. That's exactly what you need to do. Bring her to HendryCon in the fall. Dean Freakin' Wheeler, Phil, you know what would be bitching if you would be willing to make your BSPers football players in the Dickman League? It would be a hoot to hear our names in a broadcast. I thought about that. It's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. So we will definitely work on that one. That's a great idea. Kenneth Peabody, my name was a player last week. Ken Peabody? Robert, I miss Hal and Viola. James, Dean, great idea. Robert, I've missed Vernon saying mommy or daddy the last few times he's been on. Kenneth, mama. Michael, Claire, what I like about the classic shows is the way the characters change or finding out more about them, like Jay Santos having a brother named Carl who's a child molester, or Bobby Dooley having a daughter. Was it Jay Santos? Yeah, the Jay Santos having a brother named Carl was, I don't even remember that. So to me, that was a beautiful thing. Do you still play Madden on PC for the Lions games? Yes. And that's going to change next season. We're going to get rid of it finally and get to a PlayStation or Xbox situation, so long as we can recreate the, you know, the atmosphere, the sound effects. I don't even think it has to do with the crowd noise so much as it has to do with just the teams in the game. Nathan Smith, Hal and Viola were great, always running out of gas. You'd think Bob Bacon would learn from them. Mike Nichols, holy Jesus, Frank Gray carving up Frankie Valli the other day got me laughing so hard I nearly piled up my car. I don't remember that. Frankie Valli. I remember talking about Frankie Valli. The Frank Gray golfing bits kick my ass. They're so good. Tubworks. You know, those golf bits, Tubworks, came about as the result of that sound effect. That's an example of how a sound, you know, they say in acting, maybe a piece of wardrobe is what inspires you. And sometimes it's just a sound effect, literally. Now, I don't know if I have that. I think it's under phone. But when I first heard that sound effect, and I knew we had it, but I didn't know we had it. You know, it was, in other words, it wasn't anything all that special. But when I first heard this, and it was a phone bed with wind, I thought, oh, my God, it sounds like I'm out on the golf course. Or you could be anywhere, you know. I thought, dude, that is a great sound effect for a guy that's playing golf, and that's what inspired. And then I thought, which character is the most logical golf-playing character? It was Frank Gray. Jeff, possibly touchy question here. Ignore if you don't want to say, but I've always been curious. Whatever happened to the Brian Cox bullcrap? That guy was as close to a real-life Steve Bozell, if ever there was one. Jeff, I don't know if you're a Miami listener, but Jeff, I think you'd almost have to be a Miami listener. What happened with Brian Cox is very simply this. He sued us for defamation and slander as the result of me basically saying he was a homosexual, and that was the result of him publishing on our airwaves the phrase, suck my dick. And he was angry at WIOD because I had been doing a show that was satirizing Brian Cox as a talk show host. Brian Cox had been given an hour on WQAM. I think that's the station that was the sports station in Miami. And so I came on the air talking like I was Brian Cox. Just, Dan Marino, man, he got that Jerry curl, all kinds of shit. Anyway, he filed suit against the radio station and me, and it went on for a number of years. It went on to the point, it went on even after I got to L.A. The lawsuit was continuing until finally about a year, I think, into my being in Los Angeles, maybe 2 or 3 years into my being in Los Angeles, there was a, it was either the suit was dropped or they dropped me and Bob Green and some of the other principals from the suit, and it was simply a lawsuit against Clear Channel. But I don't know, so don't quote me on this. But somehow, the suit just got sort of chilled out. I never paid any money, but I'm not saying that I won. I'm just saying that nothing happened beyond the fact that I didn't hear anything about it after that year. Now, cut to about 3 years after that, I'm at a Christmas party for Premier Radio and Fox Radio, and I meet Brian Cox and I meet his wife. And his current wife, I forget the young lady's name, but she was really a terrific lady and talked to me about Brian and about, their life together and how he sort of matured, as a broadcaster. And at that time, Brian was working for Fox Radio. I'm not saying anything like I won. I'm just saying that, and I'm not saying that Brian won. I'm just saying that he seemed to have moved past it. And for my part, I probably moved past that point in my career where, I'm going to just wildly and crazily, attack individuals that way. I mean, I don't do local radio anymore. Football, I found out something really interesting, and I mentioned it on Twitter this week. There are no sports journalists. A journalist is somebody who reports truth. A journalist is someone who goes for a story. There are no sports journalists, and I mention that because, half of these guys are flying on the team charter to the team away game. Being treated to the team's food. How do you call yourself a journalist when you're taking that kind of a perk from the club? Now, those guys, the journalists, would say, "Hey, Phil, if they don't put me on that charter, I don't tell their story. They need me on that plane. They should fly me to the game because I'm there to promote their team." Well, are you promoting their team? Or are you reporting on the team? What are you doing? So, when I had that problem with Brian Cox, right away, man, the media in Miami was completely against me and completely on his side. They probably never goddamn heard the show. But they were completely on his side and completely against me. Why? There's one fucking reason and only one reason, despite what those motherfuckers will tell you. They're sucking the dick of the Miami Dolphins. They're flying on that plane. They're going to the games. They're staying in a hotel. It's far sexier and far more exciting and far more perks to be nice to a Miami Dolphin than it is to be nice to Phil Hendry. And the fans themselves would much rather worship at the fucking shrine of a Brian Cox than they would at some smart-ass motherfucker like me. So, yeah, I get it. And but nonetheless, that was the truth of it. And that's the thing that I live through. Kenneth Peabody says, "One of my most prized possessions is my personalized Phil Hendry Premier Radio headshot that hangs framed in my home office." Thank you, Kenneth. I hope it's not too... It says to Kenny, I hope it's not too obtrusive, so that people aren't talking. Not about us, about you. All right, so Jamie, nothing wrong at all with people respecting copyright. No, there's nothing wrong with it. Among the sane and among the law-abiding, Jamie, but among people who still have a problem with reality. Kenneth Peabody, "My sister got it for me for Christmas. She got to sit in studio with Phil back in the day." Oh, that's where you got the picture? Thank you, Kenneth. Bonnie, "The site says you're in Beverly, room 1 for the Podfest." Thank you, Bonnie. 2 p.m., Beverly, room 1. That's the Beverly Sofitel Hotel. 2 p.m. Got it. Bonnie, I owe you. Phil, "I have the KFI CDs from 97 through 99. I have those too. If you want, I can share them with you. I have them." Yeah, I have those too, Kevin, and I appreciate that very much. What we don't have are the full shows. And that is what I would like to fucking have. Benny Alvarez, I remember your first KFI episode. You replaced Mr. KFI. You did a great impersonation of Shaq. That's right. I was pissed until I understood what you were about. Been a fan since. Thank you, Benny. Yeah, we were talking about Shaq was saying, I forget what it was, but I got assigned. You want to hear about this? This is great. Benny Alvarez, listen to this, brother. I did this bit. This is radio. I did this fucking bit about Shaq O'Neal. He was pissed off. You were pissed off. And then they found out that it was a gag. It was shtick. And then Shaq signed a basketball and sent it over to the station. Who do you think wound up with the fucking basketball? The motherfucking general manager, Howard Neal. I didn't. The general manager of the station. How the fuck does the general manager of the goddamn radio station wind up with that fucking basketball? You know, why didn't I wind up with that basketball? So in other words, Shaq signed a basketball and sent it to Howard Neal, congratulating Howard on hiring me? I don't know, you know. If you got the basketball, Howard, how about giving me, I don't know, a bonus or something? That basketball is worth some fucking dollars now. That was a signed NBA, I saw it, you know, Shaq O'Neal. I didn't get that fucking ball, he did. I only say this in passing, you know, it's what it is. Kenneth Peabody, it took me a good 2 weeks to figure the show out. I remember Phil saying he was going to shoot himself through the hand with a .22. I sat in my car for 3 segments waiting for him to do it. Mike Nichols, Brian Cox, the shitty old linebacker. Well, Brian had his moments. Patrick Carano, Phil, any thoughts on bringing back Joe Dickhead and the Professor? Also, Bozell and Dickman doing games is comedy gold. Yeah, we had Bozell and Dickman doing NFL playoff games, and I thought that was great, too. I thought it was great fun, too. I would love for Bozell and Dickman to do the playoff games if we could do it without the NFL background. In other words, they're just doing the fucking game. I think you're right. We had Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman doing the playoff games last year, and I think you're right. I think it's time to bring them back. So thank you for that, Patrick. We're going to do it. Phil, you mentioned some current litigation. What's that about? No current litigation. Not that I mentioned current. No, it's not litigation. What would I have said that might have led you to believe that? Maybe you could refresh my memory, Colby. There's no litigation. There's no nothing. I keep my fucking shit together now. You know, I don't get sued for anything now. I do the suing. I don't get sued, you know. Jamie Rock says, sounds like somebody had a lot of money to burn. Those big drawn-out lawsuits aren't cheap. Jamie's speaking about the Brian Cox lawsuit. Yeah, and I was deposed by Brian's attorney in Miami, and our attorneys deposed Mr. Cox. And, you know, it was very funny because my point back then and my point remains, and I think I made it fairly well. I mean, I think it reverberated a little bit. I'm not saying it went through the whole, but it did reverberate a little bit, at least insofar as Miami and maybe a little bit in L.A. And my point was simply this. These guys, these jocks that come into my business, they come into my business without any kind of initiation. They come into my business without any kind of hazing. They come into my business getting their asses licked up one side and down the next. And they're terrible. They're fucking terrible. The motherfuckers are loaded with cliches. These motherfuckers are unbelievably stale, unbelievably monotone. I don't know about anybody else, but this is how I feel. They come right off of a football field. They're awarded a six-figure fucking salary to sit on their motherfucking ass and say all of this dog shit that I, you know, frankly, I would rather hear a fan out of the stands. I would rather hear one of you guys. Anybody, I would personally think it would be far more worth the while of a fucking football team to get some fan out of the stands to sit in the booth with the play-by-play asshole and give his commentary than these dipshit motherfucking jocks. Nothing personal, but this is my career. This is my business. This is my industry. And you fucking faggoty-ass motherfucking jocks coming off the field and putting on your fucking suit and your tie, and now you're all of a sudden a fucking broadcaster, motherfucker? You know, if I had it within my ability, and I did it at least once with Brian Cox and a couple of other guys, I'd put you motherfuckers through the biggest fucking hazing and the biggest initiation. I give you shit up one side and down the neck. I'm going to find out whether your fucking ass even belongs in the same fucking room with me, motherfucker, let alone the same business, you know? So the Brian Coxes of the world, and God bless you, Brian. You know, Brian got, he took my shit. And the rest of these motherfuckers need to have a fucking, you know, need to be put through their paces a little bit. Because these fucking assholes didn't give their life to my business. Now, if I put on a fucking helmet and shoulder pads and I went out on a football field, people would laugh their fucking asses off at me. And as well they should. Well, the same fucking thing should happen to these pricks. When they come into my fucking line of work, they come into my industry, I give 40 years of my fucking life to this business, and some fucking punk-ass fucking meathead prick off a football field is going to come into the broadcast booth and pretend he belongs in my industry? Fuck you, motherfucker. You're going to fucking feel the sting just the same way you did when you were a fucking rookie busted in into the locker room of some National Football League team. Your ass is mine. I don't give a fuck how big and bad you are, because guess what, prick? You know, all anybody sees or hears is what you look like on TV or how you sound on the radio. And I don't think for a minute the people that watch or listen give a shit, but I give a shit. I give a fuck. You know, I care because I work my ass off. And you're fucking getting your six-figure salary, and you fucking suck, motherfucker. You sound like a mealy-mouthed motherfucker. Let me give you an example. Since we're just talking, it's just us girls. Shaq O'Neal is a fascinating guy. He has a podcast that a lot of people download. He has all kinds of heavyweight guests on that podcast. And he's all this in a fucking slice of fucking cheese. But if you let me loose on that motherfucker, I would rip his ass up one side and down the neck. I would make fun of that. I would turn that motherfucker inside out on that dog shit that he does, okay? Now, I say that with all due respect. I nothing Phil Henry's going to say is going to keep Shaq O'Neal from making his fucking $85 billion a year. But he is deserving, as is anybody who is a green-ass, punk-ass rookie. He's as deserving as anyone to have his ass taken apart, right? And why more people don't do this shit? And I'll tell you the reason. I've said this for years. There's no fucking pride in our industry. There, seriously, anybody who's a broadcaster, podcast, whatever you want to call us, all of us entertainers, we have no fucking pride. All we want to do is sell our own asses out so we can get next to people like that. All we want to do is just sell ourselves out and be the, you know, some kind of a somebody's bitch, you know, and not stand up for our profession. You know, so they can do whatever they want. They're going to make the money they want. They can, you know, they're friends with the people they want to be friends with. But nobody's going to tell me. I don't get to comment on that. And my comment on this, any jock coming off the field, off of a field, into where I work, that motherfucker is up for fucking grabs. And I'll do my best if I think about it, because most of the time I don't give a shit. You know, half of these fucking clowns come in and out of those broadcast booths, whatever. I haven't even heard of half of these pricks, but if I take note, yeah, you know, I'll take a shot. So that was why that shit happened with Brian Cox, and why it got as vociferous as it did, because I just don't think that should go uncommented on. Jeff Kennedy says the G. Gordon Liddy bits were funny as hell. Bud would be snickering because you said Cox. Yes. Tub Works, there was an old show from the 2000s with you doing a G. Gordon Liddy segment where everyone just hung up. It was fantastic. Well, G. Gordon Liddy is a slightly different version of Art Bell. And you understand President Clinton and his bride. That's the way G. Gordon Liddy talked. You know, so that's whatever happened to my friend's place, Kenneth People. It's still there. They're still there on Hollywood Boulevard, Kenneth. Robert, Bozell auditioning saying first down still cracks me up. Is that, what is that? Saying first down still cracks me up. Oh, I don't remember that bit at all. I guess it was Steve, was he auditioning for a referee part or a play-by-play guy? Kobe, you said something about 3 weeks ago about you needing to sue someone. God damn, I don't remember that, brother. I really don't. I apologize. I don't remember, man. Jeff Kennedy, didn't the real G. Gordon Liddy report on Steve Bozell thinking he was a real person? Yes, he did, Jeff. G. Gordon Liddy, on his show, read out loud all of the lawsuits that Steve Bozell had filed from some website, and it may still be there. A fan of the show or someone listening to the show put together all these Steve Bozell lawsuits and put them up on the site. And Liddy one day read them all on his show. And I laughed about it because I thought, well, what kind of a producer have you got, Mr. Liddy, that this individual handed you this thing to read and didn't do any checking that to make sure that this was real? And so there's G. Gordon Liddy, a man named Steve Bozell, because that's what Liddy did. I mean, I could hear Liddy didn't do any fucking show prep. He just walked in, he took a newspaper, he read the goddamn thing, and that's what this guy does. That's what half of these motherfuckers do. That's why these guys, everybody that gets into radio thinks it's real fucking easy, you know. They're led to believe that it's real easy by the fucking assholes that hire them. The fucking executives, programmers, and general managers that hire, oh, you can do this in your sleep. They have no conception of what it takes to do a great show. And so, because they don't, they tell G. Gordon Liddy, oh, it's real easy. So G. Gordon Liddy gets on there and he reads this shit. And the next thing you know, he finds out the next day or the day after, goddamn, that stuff doesn't exist. Mr. Hendry made that shit up, Mr. Liddy. Well, why didn't you tell me? Well, we didn't know, sir. You didn't know. Do you do any research? Let me ask you, swinging, is there one swinging dick here? And I'm working for, what is this, ABC Radio, is that right?
Well, Gordon.
No, don't give me the Gordon. I want to know, is there one swinging dick here that understands I wind up looking like I've got egg on my face?
I apologize, sir.
You apologize now. You apologize now.
Yes, he did. Yes, he absolutely did.
Dean Freakin' Wheeler, I would love to hear another Kip Pernille fishing show, perhaps with a guest in the boat, a bizarre guest, might be funny, someone like Mavis. What would Mavis be doing on a fishing boat?
What would she be doing on a fishing boat? I think Mavis would be, she's fishing the way that her husband, the way her husband taught her to fish, you know? She's fishing the way her husband taught her to fish. What is this, man?
And that's what I think. And she's out there, you know. Jeff Kennedy, G. Gordon, man named Steve Bozell of Corona, California, has filed over 60 lawsuits in the state of California. Is that what he said? A man named Steve Bozell of Corona, California, has filed over 60 lawsuits in the state of California.
That's exactly what he did. Yeah, and that was on the show. I forget the one that was.
The KFI years 4 to 7 were the greatest. No matter what my ass in my car at 4 p.m. No matter what my ass in my car at 4 p.m.
I think that those are the best shows we did, Kenneth. I agree. I think the best years. And do you want to know something?
When we did that 4 to 7 p.m. time slot, the greatest radio shows that we did, we never broke a 3 share in the ratings. So what that tells you is the following thing. The show was badly positioned. The show was, frankly, I think David Hall did everything that he could. I believe, personally, that my radio show never belonged on a traditional talk station. I say that now. I was very grateful to have the gig at KFI. Very grateful. Very grateful to be working at WIOD. All the stations I worked at. But I knew that as I moved on with the show and the show evolved, I just, frankly, I just felt that it was time to
land on a radio station that was formatted for a kind of talk radio that was more personality talk, that wasn't traditional talk radio, that was entertainment talk, you know? So, Kenneth, you make a really good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. Those 4 to 7 p.m. shows that we did on KFI, and I'll tell you when they were. They were between 2000 and the spring of 2000, I believe, and the spring of 2001. Am I right or am I wrong? I think so. And we were doing afternoon drive on KFI, and we did just fucking incredibly funny bits. Just incredibly funny shit. There's just nothing that even fucking comes close, man. And yet we never busted a three-share. That tells me something fundamental. People that tune into talk radio in afternoon drive are tuning in to hear something more traditional or something not quite. They have to be set up. The station, the show, something, the promotion, the positioning has to be set up in such a way so that people expect it. But the fact is, when people used to say, for instance, when they promoted my show, they would say one of the, they'd say, well, put Phil on your show, put Phil on your station, and it's like having Saturday Night Live. That's what they would say to stations in promoting my show. But radio stations are not like television stations. They don't block program. They don't have, radio stations, unlike TV stations, don't have music, then drama, then comedy, then news, then comedy. You know, they don't do that. Radio stations are fairly consistent around the clock with what they do. So, to say to a radio station, this is your Saturday Night Live, they're in a program director in America, with the exception of maybe one or two, that even fucking understood what it was they were talking about. They put the show on, and if it didn't get the magic fucking double-digit numbers within, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months that their fucking Rush Limbaugh, Laura Ingraham shows got, which, you know, I like Rush. Laura Ingram, yeah, if you want to keep hearing right-wing motherfucking talk radio, good for you, great, okay, you know. But I'm not putting Laura down. What I'm saying is we don't belong in a station like that. We never did belong in a station like that. But there's no programmers in radio that were thinking outside the box enough to say, we need an entirely new format. We need an entirely new format. Now, some people may say, well, what about Free FM? What about The Loop? What about WIOD? If you know what you're doing, yeah. If you know what the fuck it is you're doing. But if you're doing a radio station that is a lift of Howard Stern, which is what KLSX was. Give an example. Here in L.A., we had KLSX. They thought they were a personality talk station. No, they weren't. They were just a mother... There was everybody trying to be Howard Stern. There wasn't one fucking unique talent on that station outside of Howard Stern. And that includes that fucking comb-over boy. There's not one motherfucker on that station doing anything interesting besides Stern. I don't give a fuck who you mention. Everybody was doing their version of Howard Stern. And as a result, it was a piece of shit radio station. Went off the air because they didn't get any fucking numbers. They had numbers with Howard. The rest of the day, it sucked ass. I don't give a fuck what that comb-over motherfucker says. That motherfucker, he didn't get any fucking significant number. So, the answer to the question, or shall I say the comment on your comment, Kenneth, which is a good comment, is that it was great radio, and I'm proud of it, and I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I'm glad that you know, someday we'll memorialize it on our website, because we really should. Oh, we do. We have it. We have it. Yeah, it's there. It was our 4 to 7 years, yeah. Go back and listen between 2000 and 2001. Those were our 4 to 7 years, 4 to 7 p.m. years, or year, and you will hear great radio. But it did not get... According to the Arbitron ratings, it didn't get an audience. They couldn't sell it. And we wound up, I remember when I walked in and talked to Craig Kitchen at Premiere, they were going to move me back to nights. Because fucking Clear Channel in L.A., Roy Laughlin, who ran the Clear Channel group, said, we got to do something here. You know, Roy, like every other motherfucking suit, was in a panic. Like every other fucking suit, wetting himself. I don't give a shit, motherfucker. Do whatever you want me to do. You know, I'll go back to nights. And I stayed at nights. And that's where I stayed because, you know, that's where all that weird shit goes at night. Even though, you know, They would much rather probably have me talking about Iraq and we did, you know, we did, man. You know, after 2001, we went ahead and we did the Iraq thing. And frankly, I'm sorry that I did. I'm just fucking sorry. The show was a comedy show. It should have stayed a comedy show. You know, however, that's, you know, you live and you learn. Nathan, there are some days I want to get folks to believe that Elcott, the next step, is a real cult. Nathan, if you sell it, I will come out as Elcott. I'll split the money with you. Bernie Alvarez, Steve Bozell is my favorite character. Mavis, a close second. I like Steve. Steve's great. In fact, tomorrow, if you are at the podcast festival in L.A., Steve Bozell will host the show. Steve Bozell will come out as the host of the show tomorrow in Los Angeles at the Sofitel Hotel in Beverly Hills. Nathan Smith says, I'd say Bud is my favorite character. Mavis is great. Thank you. Robert, Bozell was auditioning for a play-by-play years before he and Bud did their thing. Some other character, probably Vernon, tore him apart for his first down. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that. Thank you, Robert, for reminding me of that. I can hear Steve. I can hear Steve doing that. I can hear him
And okay, and now, first down.
I don't know. I don't remember. Do you remember the year? Do you remember the... Jesse, I'm back. What I miss? All kinds of shit, Jesse. Nathan Smith, what movie is playing in the background? Nathan, that is a video that I took from the dashboard of my car. That's, I guess you could say, that's Phil Dashcam shit. What you're looking at here is the 101 freeway heading north, and that is bird shit. I saw somebody mentioning it looks like there's bird shit. Yes, it is. It's bird shit. On the right side of the windshield there. That is the 101 North out of Los Angeles heading up toward Channel Islands Beach. What you're looking at there is the stretch of the 101 that is heading into the Calabasas, Agoura Hills, well, Calabasas and the cutoff to Malibu Canyon Road, if I'm not mistaken. I've taken it so many fucking times. I mean, I've driven this thing so many goddamn times. It looks like it to me. I could be wrong. But I propped my phone up on the dash one day, and I had a little brace that was a little iPhone brace that someone had given me, and I wasn't sure exactly what the fuck it was I was doing with it, but I propped the thing up on the dash. It seemed to work pretty good, and I used that because I actually got a ticket one day when a California Highway Patrolman saw me holding my camera up doing something similar, and I, you know, quite frankly, I just went, you got me, and I pulled over. This looks like now we're coming into Westlake Village, so we've passed through the Agoura. We've passed through the Calabasas area. We're coming into Westlake Village and those points. Kenneth, I still love Steve suing Erin Brockovich because he spontaneously ejaculated when he saw Julia Roberts. It's fucking great. You're right. I love it. Gar, Steve expressing his sexuality because of Dr. Phil by putting his cigar out on his wife's ass. Yeah, Gar, you know what? Thank you for reminding me of that. If you remember what goddamn... what year that was, because I remember when Steve was saying that
because of Dr. Phil, I want to express myself and I need to express myself openly. And
so what is that?
I want to butt my cigarette on my wife's ass. And
Steve was trying to explain that he didn't mean to hurt his wife. It was just him expressing himself. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's beautiful, man. It's beautiful. Bonnie, that movie in the background... Well, yeah, one of the movies in the background is Diary of a Nudist. You're right, Bonnie. And I'm sort of shocked that you know that. I mean, it's not... Okay. Robert, Nudie Cutie in the background. Yep. That was the 60s Nudie Cutie. Kenneth, Van Gogh sold one painting in his life. Little solace to you, Phil, but the greatest artists are never appreciated. Yes, that's true. Van Gogh wound up shooting himself in the stomach, which I'm hoping to avoid. Bonnie, are you a nudist? Get a load of these guys here. They're asking Bonnie if she's a nudist. Jeff, what happened to Allie? Where the fuck is Allie tonight, man? Is she around? Jeff, Kennedy, people, I also remember the Erin Brockovich bit. It was actually the real Erin's boobs that made him have a spontaneous ejaculation. He saw a picture of the real Erin B. on a poster. Yes, that's right. I actually went and saw Erin Brockovich speak at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza, which is a local you know, Civic Arts Plaza and Civic Arts Theater, I should say. And she spoke. They have these, you know, these interesting person. What do you call these fucking Speaker of the Month series? And you get your tickets and you go and see these speakers. And they had some pretty interesting people there. And one night, myself and my ex-wife went to see Erin Brockovich. She said, "Let's go see Erin Brockovich." I said, "Yeah, okay." And I saw her and I thought, you know, I admire this woman. She's the one that did this shit. Not Julia Roberts, she's the one. And Erin Brockovich, to see Erin Brockovich, and a lot of you have seen her, is a, you know, I'd say handsome woman. And I mean that, you know, this is coming from a guy that, you know, not all that great looking myself. So, but I'm saying that Erin Brockovich is and wears these low-cut dresses. She's always got her tits squeezed up and, you know, just ready to, you know, kind of rock and roll the world. And she always wears, it looks like she always wears these short dresses. And I saw her that night giving her talk. And she said a couple of things I thought were interesting. She said, number one, when Julia Roberts won the Best Actress Award and did not mention Erin Brockovich by name, the individual, the woman, she said, "I didn't give a shit. I was putting the kids to bed." She talked about the actual case and the actual days and nights that she spent working on this. And Erin was working out of Westlake Village, where I was living at the time, and with the eventual mayor of Westlake Village, and what was really happening. I thought that was very interesting. And she developed a personal philosophy of life that she imparted to the audience. I thought it was anybody that comes from the roots that she came from, which are pretty working class and decidedly, let's say, undereducated, and pushed herself to the heights that she did, that's somebody that's worth listening to, personally, that's what I thought. Jeff, artists never appreciated their time. Reminds me of the R.C. Collins bit where he said that Kurt Cobain sold out because he knew that if he committed suicide, he'd sell a lot more records. Love it. Love it. In other words, Kurt Cobain committing suicide was going commercial. All right. Woo! Fucking great. Comb Over Boy, blast from the past. Thank you, Robert. Kenneth Peabody, great boobs are great boobs. Yes. I've personally pulled it to Julia Roberts, and I'm not ashamed. You have? I better not say, but that's... Nathan Smith, 1999 and 2000 of the years I will usually listen to in the archives. Those really are some of the best shows. I've heard people say, Nathan, very interesting point that you make. I've heard people say 2005 was the best year. I've heard people say 2005 was the best year of the show. And I got to tell you something. I almost agree with them because by 2005, my voice had matured to where it is today. 99 and 2000, I barely recognized myself. But more to the point, and more interestingly, by the year 2005, we pretty much had the format and the delivery and the package together. And if you want to make an even further argument, you can say that by 2005... the show had reached its perfect produced self, you know. It was tight. It was, the material was spot on. The delivery, the approach, the format was spot on. I'd say about 2005 but I'm not disagreeing with you, man. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying for my way of thinking, just looking at it as a programmer, I'd say, I remember the 2005 was, we had our shit about as together as we were going to have it on that show. The only other place we could have taken is where we've taken it now, which is completely flush the fucking phone calls and fly solo and basically say, here's what else we can do. You know, now, could I do what I'm doing now for 3 hours? I want you to think about this. I basically carry the entire thing through an hour, 4, 5, 6, 7 voices for a solid hour. I'm telling you, I'm not just making this up. It'll fucking rip your vocal cords to shreds. Could I do it for 3 hours? Yeah. How long? Not long at all, man. Nobody could. Nobody. There's nobody doing what I'm doing. There's nobody doing what I'm doing right now, A, because nobody's going to pay him to do it, you know? So I propose to you guys, for what it's worth, in fact, I know this to be the case, what you're viewing and what you're hearing on our website now the show that I do now, in conjunction with what's on our archives, you have never seen and have never heard before, and I doubt seriously if you will ever hear or see it performed as well in the future. I'm not saying nobody will try it, but I know how to do it. See, I know how to do it better than anybody because I created it. I'm not saying I created characters on the radio. I'm not saying that I created characters on a podcast or an audio comedy. I'm not saying that I'm the first guy to do these sophomoric or Socratic conversations with myself. I am saying that I'm the very first guy to take it to the real extent that I've taken it, to create the storylines that I've created, to weave it so seamlessly that you believe you're hearing real people and that it's as perfect a satire of real broadcasting as you're ever going to hear. That's all I'm trying to say. Kenneth, I remember the year. Okay, are you going to tell me? It was actually the real Aaron's Boots. Are you a nudist? Nudie cutie, movie in the background. You were pulling your pud to it. Steve, what is this? Steve, I still love Steve stewing Aaron Brockovich. I'm just trying to get caught up here. Bozell. G. Gordon. Jesus Christ, where are we at here, guys? Alcott, okay, here we go. Jay Santos busted me for putting her in the spank bank. Kenneth Peabody mentions that. Mike says, I may have been a Stern clone, but the 2006 version of Adam Carolla's show on KLSX was comedy gold. The 07 and 08 versions, however, were hot garbage. I don't know those. I don't remember Adam from 2007 or 2008 because I had my own fucking problems then. But I'll tell you one thing, man. You cannot dispute the success that Adam's had with his podcast. And I wonder to this day, is there anybody at CBS that even gives a shit when they wake up in the morning and they put on their fucking jock straps and they stick their butt plug in? Do they even, you know, really take seriously how badly they fucked that entire situation up? Adam Carolla turns out to become a new media star. And he was on the CBS airwaves. And essentially what they were saying was what I've been saying for the longest time. The modern generation of broadcast executives can't program shit. They can't hire shit, and they can't make any money. There are no broadcast executives anymore. It was a caller who ripped Steve Bozell about first down, Dean freaking Wheeler, Bozell's cigarette, and Dr. Phil bit, May 17, 2005. Thank you very much, Dean. The Bozell cigarette, burning it on his wife's ass, and the Dr. Phil bit, May 17th, 2005. David Riley, the three-hour show you did as Art Bell as host a couple of years ago is one of the best shows I ever heard. Thank you very much, David. I got to find that one. Robert, you're right. It was a caller. Wish I could recall. Nathan, was it Steve Bozell that got pulled over for playing with himself in traffic because he was anxious and that was the only way to... Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. He was anxious. He was nervous. He was fucked up in the head. And he needed to relax, and so he jerked off in traffic, and the cop caught him. I thank you guys. I really do thank you guys for being with me tonight. I'm so sorry that I was late, you guys, to the party here. But I was out of the area and finally got my ass back. It was just one of those situations where I was late getting back into the studio. But thank you very much. Now, tomorrow we'll be at the Sofitel Hotel in Beverly Hills. Thank you, Bonnie, for letting me know. It's Beverly 1, 2 o'clock. Is that it? We'll be there, and I hope my throat is a little bit better. My throat, by the way, is fucked over because of doing Lions Line and doing some pre-production on the Lions game. And they how you doing, buddy? Huh, buddy? Here he is. Come on. He doesn't want me to pick him up. It's Poncho. Come on, Ponch. Everybody wants to see you. Yeah. Here he is, the Ponchmeister. This is my boy. That's a good boy. This is a Poncho. He hates being picked up, man. All right, buddy. He comes in and stares at me, and he goes, "So what's with you?" And I'm like, "All right, buddy. I'll be there in a second, man." All right, y'all. Guys, thank you so much for being a part of our chat tonight. I promise you, next week I will be a far more responsible individual in terms of, you know, make it on time here. My thanks to Alex Cohen, of course, our operations guy, great guy, and to all of our BSPs. I can't thank you enough. You guys are what really drives this shit, man, and that's really, really important to us. And again, like I say, these Classic Fridays that we have are designed for, you know, people who do not know what we've got on our website or are kind of moderately interested in what's happening on our website. And, you know, they want to know what's the thing, man. So thank you again. And we'll talk to you guys next time. We'll see you on Monday. And, of course, tomorrow, if you're at the LA Podfest. If you're not there, go to the LA Podcast Festival website and get a pass so you can watch all of the live streaming video. But use our code for your discount, Hendry, H-E-N-D-R-I-E, Hendry. Use that code, you get a discount, and you'll be able to watch all of the groovy-ass shit there on the LA Podcast Festival site. But whatever. All right. So we'll see you tomorrow. I hope to see you in Beverly Hills, if not, see you on Monday.